jacket, shirt, ski pants, and boots left. Wait for your moment. Neck and chest are okay targets now. Upper thighs are still not good because of the thick ski pants. Wait for your moment. Imagining Shane's voice so smooth and steady makes me feel less panicked. I've been here before. On the mat. At least Daniel didn't grab me from behind and incapacitate me before I knew what was happening. That was the biggest danger. At least now I have a chance. Wait for your moment. Get undressed, Avery. I want you naked. I want my bulky coat off, too. It'll be more difficult to move fast and strike hard with it on. Surreptitiously, I set the knife on the stone next to my thigh, making sure it's balanced and won't slip away. My coat's already unzipped, so it's easy to take off. I set it on the opposite side of me on the crumbled rock wall. Shirt next, he says, nodding encouragingly, happily, crazily. Shirt next, he repeats when I don't continue to undress. Shirt off. No, fuck you, Daniel. It's cold out. My voice is still steady, another minor victory. Wait for your moment. Let's go back to the cabin, I say. It's warm and dry there. I don't want you dry, he says with a leer. God, I hate you. Besides, blood looks so good against the snow. Dramatic. Cinematic. He glances around. I like it here. It's a spot I'll always remember. Oh, God. Where have the other spots been, Daniel? If I stall long enough, someone else might come along. That could be a good distraction. It could also bring reinforcements, so it's more than just me against him. Wait for your moment. Get out of your clothes, he says impatiently, his voice growing almost nasal. Where did you take the others? He smiles slowly until it becomes a sneer. Then he darts forward and grabs me. It happens too fast. He's got my arms and I panic, trying to tear myself away. You never know how you'll react in the moment until the moment comes. I fall over the rocks into the cabin's frame and land on the rotting floorboards. It's jarring, but I'm okay. The impact isn't as hard as when I was slammed into the mat while training with Shane. Daniel hops the short rock wall and stands over me. I told you to undress. Stop stalling. He punches me in the face. More adrenaline pours into my veins as I gasp in pain. His groin is protected. And if we're both standing, I won't be tall enough to reach his throat. He'll spot the knife coming for sure. This is not the moment. If he pins your arms, you're finished. The knife will be useless. Or he'll find it and use it on you. My heart hammers so hard it feels as if it'll beat its way out of my chest. If you raise the blade, you cannot hesitate, Shane's voice barks. I plan my moves in an instant. This is your moment. Take it. I grab Daniel's sweater and jerk him down with my left hand. He falls, landing on top of me. With my right hand, I press the knife's button, activating its spring action. Now, now. Now! The blade is silent as it emerges. My arm swings, and the knife cuts through the air. I slam the blade under Daniel's jaw until it can't go deeper, and then drag my arm forward toward his chin. The practiced motion is automatic. At first, there's nothing but my ragged breath and his confused expression. The blade hits something hard. Maybe his Adam's apple. At the same time, a gash opens in the knife's wake. Blood sprays out and bursts upward as a beating red geyser. He jerks back, shocked. The blade's cut, and I'm wrenched upward and forward. But then the knife pulls free, I fall back onto the ground, knife in hand, staring up at him. He opens his mouth to scream, but there's only a broken, spluttering sound. Blood splashes outward in pulsing beats, and he grabs at his neck to try to stop it. Daniel staggers upright to escape, but instead of backing away, he lifts his foot to stomp on my face. I roll sharply to the side. His leg barely misses me when it pounds down, cracking a board. Daniel teeters, trying to regain his balance. Almost got me, could have knocked me out and killed me. Shane's voice in my head says, "You don't stop till he's dead." I lurch up and shove Daniel with all my might. He topples and lands hard. Dropping down on top of him, I kneel on his arms. His attempt to knock me off fails. He's weakening. When I bring the knife down, he sees it coming and turns his head just in time. The blade skids off his cheekbone instead of entering his eye socket. "You don't stop." I grab his hair, holding his head, and try again.
Chapter 34. Shane. "Avery!" My voice is ragged from yelling. All I see as I run down the trail is the booted foot. The person's down and unmoving. "Avery!" I reach the broken stone cabin. There are scattered clothes. The body is too big to be her. It's a man. Blood is everywhere, and half his face is cut up and unrecognizable. My head jerks from side to side. There are two sets of skis. She was here. Is she wounded? Dying nearby. "Avery!" I yell again, listening for her. Please let her be alive. I'll do anything. Just let me find her alive. I spot boot prints and a blood trail in the snow. I sprint through the woods, following the tracks. When I reach the stream, I see her. Avery stands at the edge with sleeves that are soaked and dripping. My black knife dangles from her fingers. Pink droplets fallen from the tip of the blade. "Avery!" She turns slowly, her expression vacant. Her pretty face bears a red scuff on one cheek, but it's not lacerated, just wet and pale. Her shirt is soaked and so bloodstained I can't tell if she's wounded. It's also not clear whether she's been crying, but there's a shattered look to her. I walk closer, but slowly. "Ave?" Her throat convulses as she swallows. "I heard you and did what you said," she murmurs. "I heard you. I waited for my moment." A long breath escapes through her pale, potted lips. "I didn't stop. Not until I was sure. Jesus." As panic eases, realization dawns. His mangled face. That was all her. And now she's in the aftermath. Her voice is like a haunted house, empty and creaking, whispering with tragedy. "Good," I say gently. "You did what you had to do." My own lips are bone dry. I lick them, studying her. I can't tell if she's physically injured or just in shock. I need to move close enough to check, but I'm afraid she'll bolt. There's a look to her that worries me. She reminds me of a deer that's caught a hunter's scent, wary, watchful, spooked. Her right hand shakes, the knife vibrating back and forth like a tuning fork. She tilts her head. "I don't know what to do now. We didn't talk about that. Come here." My hand reaches out, beckoning her. "Come to me, baby." After a beat, Avery walks closer to stand a couple feet away. The knife twitches in her grasp, causing drops of bloody water to sway on the tip before they fall. "Yours. I stole it." She lifts the knife higher and, when I don't reach for it, adds, "Want to hear something crazy? I don't know how to close it." I take it and fold the blade away, then engage the safety. She shivers, and her teeth start to chatter. Her eyes track the knife's path into my pocket, like she needs to see it reach a secure location. "Are you hurt?"
No, not me.
Her voice is like chains rattling. I need to get you inside, someplace warm. Come here, Ave. I hold my arms out, beckoning her, and she finally walks into them. I press her against my chest, and for the first time in hours, I can breathe. I thought I might lose you. Never been that scared in my life. My confession is barely louder than the wind. You knew I was in trouble. It's half question, half statement. My lips press against her hair. Casanova sent me a message. I didn't think I'd get to you in time. After the thought of a dozen heartbeats, I add, actually, I didn't. I draw in a shaky breath. He almost won. Almost took her away from me for good. Thank God you had a knife and used it. You were here all along. You were. I don't know what she means. It doesn't matter. At the moment, nothing matters except that she's not lost. There's something that's been on my mind all day and night. The one undeniable truth. It's not the right moment, but I can't keep myself from making one more confession into the wind. I love you.
Chapter 35. Avery. In my mind, Shane becomes the wall I stand behind when I can't face things. The police arrive and take control of the property and the crime scene. My words sound distant, like they're running away through the trees. Their faces scrunch in confusion as they look around and stomp through the snow. When Shane helps explain things, it's much more clear, even to me. They transport us to the station in the back of a sheriff's cruiser. I sit so my body touches Shane, and he puts his arm around me, pressing me against his side. It's shelter, like finding an awning to stand under in a sudden downpour. Shane's voice is low and calm, the same way it's been all along, as he advises me of my rights and explains police interrogation tactics. He speaks as if they are an enemy army that has laid siege to our home and our persons. I listen carefully to everything he tells me, as though my life depends on it. I owe him that, since, without his advice, I wouldn't be alive. At the station, the police inform us of our rights and tell us we'll be questioned separately. My gaze flicks to Shane's face. It's okay. I'm right here. I won't leave you, he promises as they lead me toward a door. Taking a deep breath, I enter the cold room and settle into a hard chair. Across the rectangular table, there's a gray-haired detective with a stern expression who starts in with a million questions. I tell the story and retell it. A female deputy joins us. She acts kind but seems less genuine. To me, they look very bulky in their puffy brown coats and utility belts. When my body starts to ache from sitting, I stand. Is that enough? I lick my lips. I've told you everything. I want to go. They take pictures and collect my clothes as evidence. I'm given prisoner scrubs, but they assure me it's not a reflection of their plans. They're not going to arrest me. My words spill out slowly. Never thought that. I only defended myself. It's the truth. But their expressions appear skeptical. They don't speak again. When they release me from the room, I overhear the sheriff say that, from the state of the body, it looks like a hell of a lot more than self-defense. His words cause no emotional reaction from me. None. I feel too numb. My head turns and I stare at the sheriff. It feels as though I should say or do something. Like be more emotional or smile gratefully for their help. But what if I make the wrong choice? It might be misinterpreted. Since I don't know how to proceed, I do nothing. Watching me, the sheriff mumbles, "Jesus. Come this way, Avery," the female deputy says. I'll drive you back. drop me off alone? Where's Shane? We're still talking to him. My eyes scan the area, pausing on a closed door. He's on the other side. I'll wait. I sit on a bench near the front door. I'm freezing. It would be warmer in my car or the cabin. But the thought of going to wait farther away doesn't appeal to me. Eventually, the door to the second interrogation room opens and Shane emerges. As soon as I stand, my muscles start to shiver. I'm cold. He crosses the distance to me and drags me up against him, wrapping his arms around me. Where's her coat? Everything she was wearing is evidence. We can give you a blanket. Yeah, give me one. Moments later, he wraps me up and guides me outside to the cruiser. Time moves in fits and starts, as if I'm sleepwalking through patches of it. Back at the cabin, my gaze travels over the cars. I drove here in Ethan's Lexus. Shane's Porsche is parked beside it. Do we drive home separately? Not right now. Come inside. Relief washes over me. It wouldn't be safe for me to drive. I also don't want to be separated from him yet. The world is chaos. He restores order. As soon as the cabin door is closed, I exhale. It's just the two of us now, safe to talk. Shane opens the front of the wood-burning stove and tosses some logs inside. They think I'm a psycho. They asked if I invited Daniel here. They wanted to know what kind of movies I like. The questions were crazy. They think I lured him here to kill him. Me? They're running down blind alleys because they've never seen anything like this. It's a small department. They're just covering their bases to be thorough. Shane lights kindling and tosses it in. Are we staying here long? We don't have to. He closes the stove's grate. We can stay long enough for you to take a hot shower and put on some warm clothes. Or we can stay the night and leave in the morning. We'll do whatever you want. Did I go too far? When? When I defended myself. They called it overkill, saying I had a grudge or something. They kept asking about my relationship with him. I told the truth, but I don't know. They exchanged looks as though I'd said the wrong thing. Just because he was an arrogant jerk at times doesn't mean I would plot to kill him. When I look up, Shane is watching me. The quiet is unnerving. I didn't do very well, I say softly. I should have cried, I think. Am I too calm? No, you're in shock. Survival mode. His tone is reasonable. It makes sense. Your mind is doing its job to protect you. The police, fuck the police, he says coolly. I blink and then glance at the door. They're still out there somewhere, collecting evidence. Better if they don't hear us cursing at them. I'm scared, I admit. You don't need to be. His big hand squeezes my upper arm so firmly it's almost painful, which helps. You did everything right. There's nothing to worry about, I promise. I didn't tell them it was your knife, or that you taught me how to defend myself. I thought they might blame you. I told them. My gaze snaps up, so our eyes meet. My concern for him is the sharpest thing I've felt since I walked away from Daniel's body. You told that part? He nods, the corners of his mouth twitching like they want to smile at my incredulity. You were being stalked and assaulted on campus. You made a police report the night a rose was left in your bed, and campus police never even followed up. You had to protect yourself, Avery. No one from law enforcement was. Is that how you said it? When they pushed me, yes. Oh my God. He's so reckless and fearless. Adversarial, Shane. Best tactic? Now he does smile. Probably not. I should have cried, I repeat in a whisper. We want law enforcement to see me as vulnerable. We want them on my side when they write their report. Clearing my throat with a cough, I glance up at the exposed ceiling beams. But I don't feel like crying. I don't feel much. Just maybe relief. He wanted to rape me in the snow. He acted like there was no way to stop him. Like he could do whatever he wanted and I could do nothing. I proved him wrong, and I'm not sorry. You shouldn't be. Shane's hard, resolute tone matches mine exactly. Eva. I nod, shuddering. Shane's part monster, thank God. He's the only thing keeping me anchored to the world. I'm glad you're here. Where else would I be? When he's flippant and warm, that works too. Go take a shower. He turns and shoves some more wood into the fireplace. In the rustic bathroom, light from the exposed bulb reflects off glossy, knotty pine walls. A moment later, I'm standing under hot water, watching soap suds cover my feet and the slate tiles. I don't remember pouring shower gel into my hands or lathering myself up. On and off, gaps of time continue to go missing. It doesn't matter. You'll be all right. When I emerge from the bathroom in a towel, I go straight to the bed. Crawling under the covers, I throw the towel out onto the floor. Shane?
Yeah?
He picks up the discarded towel and places it over the back of a chair near the fireplace. Do you have a condom? He looks over his shoulder at me.
What's on your mind, Eve?
I want to. Shane turns to face the bed.
I want to, too, eventually. When the timing's right.
My thoughts are tangled vines that I don't want to unwind. I need to feel something. Your body against mine feels better than anything, so that's what I want. His voice is soft, like he's talking to a small child.
You're not yourself right now.
I can't argue that. But I still want what I want. From him. I know what I need. It's you.
I'll lie down with you.
He hauls his shirt off, then sits on the edge of the bed to take off his shoes and socks. He pauses, his brows crinkled, like he might waver. But then he stands and strips down to his skin. When he joins me in the bed, I stroke his shoulders and press up against him.
You don't need to rush this.
My hand moves to the back of his neck and pulls him closer. We kiss as though the world's ending. His hand slides between my legs and rubs my clit. I ease my legs apart, welcoming his touch. I place my hand over his, pressing it down harder, wanting something I can't name. My other hand finds his hard cock and teases it. I want all of you. He raises his head to look down at me, his own fingers still stroking me.
I doubt you know what you want right now.
I do.
Let's start with an orgasm and then see.
No, I snap. Stop hesitating. Do you want me or not? His fingers grind to a halt and his eyes narrow. Sorry. I lick my lips and tilt my head. I just know. And I don't want you to be too nice. Be the way you normally are when I need. The words break off as I try to figure out how to explain myself. I need. Shane lowers his head, so his mouth is near my ear.
Your beast?
Yes. He understands.
As usual. There will be no turning back from this.
His voice is rough-edged and hard.
If we do this, don't expect me to let you go afterward because I won't.
I shiver and squeeze his forearm, my body sizzling with anticipation.
Answer me, Avery.
The dark command in his voice makes me squirm. What? I whisper.
You, me. Inseparable. Say you understand.
Warnings drip off the edge of my mind like raindrops in the distance.
I hear them, but don't care about them, not now. There's blood on my hands, and the fear of what will happen next hovers all around me like fog. But here, with him, I can erase everything. Just for a while. I understand. He rises from the bed and gets a condom from his wallet. Before his cock disappears under the latex, I see it's hard and dark with blood. Yeah, this is what we both want. Spread your legs, Shane orders when he returns to the bed. My legs inch farther apart, and he moves above me and guides his cock to the soft, aching entrance to my body. He kisses me, slow and sweet. Then his hips rock forward ruthlessly. Oh my God. My flesh reluctantly relents, tearing and spreading around him. It hurts, and every bit of my mind focuses sharply on the place inside me that he's stretching to accommodate himself. Fuck, he groans. You're so tight and wet for me. He buries his head in my neck and starts to move. My hands grab his shoulders. There's another forceful thrust, and he's deeper. My nails dig into his flesh. Oh my God. Wait, I say breathlessly. My hips twist, trying to ease him out. Look at me. His voice is rough, which I still love. My gaze rises and our eyes lock. After a moment, I shift under him. The uncomfortable stretch intensifying. You're too big, I think. For me. No, I'm not. Slide your hand down to rub your clit, baby. His arm muscles strain under my hands. I can feel how hard his body is working to keep itself still. He wants to move. He wants to claim me. Do it. Move your hand there, kitten. His voice is irresistible. My hand sneaks down, feeling his abs, and then lower. I find my clit and circle it. After a few moments, the tingling arousal from my fingers connects to something deeper, where I'm so full. My hips move again. But this time, it's not to escape. It's a small pulse that feels good. His head drops low. That's it, he says in a husky voice. My cock is where it's meant to be, and I'm gonna fuck you with it. I shudder and rub myself harder. The ache intensifies. But it's more anticipation than pain. His pelvis draws back, and I feel my pussy losing him. Then he rocks forward, thrusting into me and hitting a spot deep inside me that is meant for him to touch. My walls contract, hugging him. I groan, my fingertips pausing. There, I whisper. Exactly that. For him, instinct takes over. The rhythm is steady and relentless. My hips rise to meet his, and my fingers rub their own steady rhythm over my clit. He's so strong that the whole bed rocks every time he thrusts. My free hand slides down his arm, so I can feel the groove of his triceps. His muscles are hard and rippling beneath his skin. There's so much power concentrated in his body, and he's forcing it all into mine. Something primal and secret passes between us. We're as we're meant to be, man, woman, interlocking bodies, skin against skin, flesh inside flesh. I build toward an orgasm, and it breaks through me, waves overtaking the shore. It rips a moan from my throat. He pumps faster. The bed banging the wall so loudly, I worry he'll punch a hole through it. Then he stiffens, tips his head back, and groans. Fuck. 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 Shane exhales, pumping more slowly, now in sharp little pulses. His breath is ragged, and he lowers his head and kisses me, licking the inside of my mouth and my lips, and then sucking on me. If he could, he would eat me alive. And I would let him. You can't know, he whispers. You can't understand how right we are together. But I'm telling you, he shudders and lowers his mouth to suck on my breast as his cock withdraws. My body melts into the mattress, still humming from the aftershocks. He licks my nipple and slowly kisses my breast. You're everything. From the second I first set eyes on you. His mouth moves up to suck on my collarbone and then my neck. A soft groan tickles my ear. You don't know. I do know, I whisper, my fingers stroking his back. I love you too.
Chapter 36. Shane. For 24 hours, we're caught in a rhythm that's all our own. The mood is Moonrise Kingdom meets Hunger Games Catching Fire. She killed to survive, and because of that, she's highly sought after. But what she needs is an escape, which is where the love-struck guy with survival skills comes in. We'll call that guy Shane. We return to my house first, and Avery pauses just inside the door. Show me the locked room, okay? Clear blue eyes trap mine, assessing me, testing me. Being the keeper of my secrets is just more to carry. You sure you want that right now? She tilts her head, causing wild waves to fall askew over one shoulder. Yes. My life will be in your hands, Ave, I say with mock gravity. You'll have to protect me. My attempt to lighten the mood doesn't land. With continued seriousness, she licks her pale lips and nods. I can do it. My smirk fades. I know you can't. So for us, trust must cut both ways, dangerous or not. My hand catches hers, and I guide her upstairs and into the middle room. Inside, I show her blank labels for bootleg liquor and start to explain how I lead people to pay me 1,000 times what a bottle's worth. Without warning, her attention wanders to an old, scarred laptop on a stand in the corner. It doesn't turn on anymore, but the hard drive has spreadsheets from my first business on it, so I've kept it until I have time to destroy it. Her fingertips drift over the cracked logo. It's like an eye that's broken. Her lids drift down and she winces. I can guess which memory is projecting onto the backs of her closed lids. Come here, baby. Let me show you how I decide on the blend. I just bought a distillery to take this to the next level. Nothing will persuade me to add to the blood she sees when she closes her eyes, so there will be no mention of the Fight Club or the Pit right now. But I can talk about whiskey and my white-collar crimes all day. My mention of the distillery doesn't entice her back to me. Instead, her teeth sink into her lower lip as she turns. Eyelids at half-mast. She murmurs, I'll take some air. And she slips from the room as though she's made of whispers, not flesh. Stepping out and locking the door, I draw a deep breath. Back in apocalypse territory, without a doubt. My gaze shifts to watch her descend the stairs. She stops halfway down and looks over her shoulder. You're coming with me. Right? Yeah, anywhere and everywhere, until I'm certain it's safe to take my eyes off you. Yeah. We can catch some fresh air on the walk to the car. We gotta go to Boston, remember? Oh, right. Boston. On and off, my baby is still walking through the New Hampshire snow, trying to find the stream where she washes off blood from her battle. I can't keep her from going, but nothing'll stop me from meeting her there to take the knife from her hand. One more time or 1,000, it doesn't matter. Avery exhales with an exaggerated grimace. Could we skip Boston for a few days? Not really. My dad and Sherry flew home in a panic. I've held them off as long as I can. If I don't produce Avery in Boston in the next hour, they will be on my doorstep in 2. All right. Her gaze rakes over me as I come down the stairs to stand next to her. How will you make it up to me? My brow cocks, and the corner of my mouth tips up. What did you have in mind? Her fingertips touch my lips. Things. Yeah. Sure. Leaning down, I kiss her. I'll do all the things. Not now, though. My king-sized bed calls to me like a trumpeting bugle. Nah, baby. Later. I force myself to say. She nods and resumes her trek down the stairs, peach of an ass within reach. My cock curses me as a fucking idiot. I ignore it. Tonight, when we're alone, I'll nail Avery to my mattress, fucking her so long and hard, she'll lose her memory. Like I said. Later. As I drive her to the city, Avery stares out her window to watch the trees. He's not taking the woods from me. If we were at the cabin, I would ski those trails today. When she falls silent, I reach across and pull her hand to me, as though my physical hold on her will prevent her mind from drifting too far away. When we reach Boston, Ethan and Sherry greet our arrival at their house with agitation. Avery immediately pulls out of their frantic hugs and circles behind me, saying she needs air. Without further discourse, she opens the front door and steps outside, coatless, with her breath fogging. I retrieve her from the step and usher her back inside, signaling for our parents to stay back a bit at first. Once the four of us are sitting at the dining room table, Avery starts to relate what happened, but then she trails off in the middle before she reaches the killing. She glances at me, and I read the look. Without missing a beat, I pick up where she left off, glossing over the more graphic parts. Sherry and Ethan ask a lot of questions. Under the table, Avery's hand squeezes my thigh, imploring me to answer. So I do. After a few minutes, they begin talking to me directly, with occasional concerned glances at her face. Avery's expression is distant, as if we're talking about something we read in the newspaper, not something that happened to her, the girl they love beyond measure. Granthorpe emailed us, Ave, Ethan says, glancing between us. They'd like you to be at the press conference if you feel up to it. She grimaces. That's all right, honey. You don't have to do anything, Sherry says. Avery's phone rings and buzzes, which it does constantly now. Everyone wants to talk to her. The FBI, the local police in Boston, GU campus police, administrators, people from school who've heard rumors that she's the girl who survived a Casanova attack. Avery drags the phone to her and turns it off. She looks at me. They're going to say it's him. They shouldn't until they're sure. We've had two conversations where she's wondered out loud whether Daniel was really Casanova. What do you mean, Avery? It is him, Ethan says. Avery's eyes bounce from my dad to the table before landing on me. Shane? I shrug at Sherry and Ethan. Avery and I wonder if Daniel might have been doing some half-assed Casanova copycat thing, so that Casanova would be blamed for what Daniel planned to do to Avery. Daniel was the one stalking her. We're sure of that. The police and the FBI found Rosewater in a squirt gun. That tracks with something that happened to Avery. Daniel had lavender roses in his car when he came to the New Hampshire cabin, but the flowers looked days old, wilted, not freshly cut like Casanova usually leaves, and law enforcement found a GPS tracker on Avery's laptop, which she got from downloading software from him when they worked on their class project. None of the other missing girls had that software on their devices. My thumb taps the tabletop. Daniel asked people about Avery and kept tabs. A girl thought it was creepy and reported it to campus police. The investigation seems to show he didn't do that with any other women. Avery glances out the window. During the search of Daniel's place, they didn't find any trophies from the women who were taken. With furrowed brows, Dad glances between us. The FBI told you all this? No. I've got a buddy from high school with an inside track. I lie. The truth is, I paid for the intel. Having cops on the take is essential to my operation. Turns out they come in handy in other ways as well. Well, it doesn't matter whether he was Casanova or not, my dad says, looking at Avery. From the standpoint of the case, you thought he was Casanova. He threatened you and tried to sexually assault you. You acted in self-defense, period. I don't want you to worry about anything, Ave. I'm not worried. Not about myself. She tilts her head, her shiny dark hair falling over her shoulder. I just thought that by killing him, I saved other women, and that maybe we could even find out where the missing ones are. Avery rubs her forehead. It's enough that you saved yourself, Sherry says. We're proud of you. Proud, Avery echoes. Then her big blue eyes turn to focus on her mom. You should thank Shane. He's the one who taught me how to defend myself. It was his knife. We are thankful to Shane, Sherry blurts. She nods gravely at me. We are. Good, because without him, I wouldn't be here. Daniel let me see his face. He wasn't planning to leave me alive after he raped me. Ethan and Sherry both wince and then look wrecked by the mental image those words conjure. Okay, I say, putting a hand on Avery's back. Time for a change of topic. We need to eat something. Not hungry? I don't care, I say, just as quickly. You're gonna eat, Ave? Her sapphire eyes rise to meet mine, halfway defiant. Pick something, or I will. She's eaten nothing since it happened. Maybe butter noodles. I roll my eyes and she rewards me with a small smirk. Yes, Sherry says, lurching to her feet. Ethan and Avery like buttered egg noodles, but that's a little minimalist for Shane and me, so maybe eggplant parm for us. Sherry's eggplant parmesan is one of the best things about her. Also, I'm up for an olive branch since she's offering. I nod. That would be great. Sherry heads to the kitchen, and I wait to see if Avery will join her to help the way she used to. Avery doesn't move, though, or even look in the kitchen's direction. Her gaze is on her hands. A crease reappears between her brows, and she picks at her cuticles. Daniel doesn't fit the FBI profile. Do you think if the FBI advised against it, the dean would hold off on saying Daniel was Casanova? My hands close over hers to protect them. Maybe. But you said you didn't want to talk to the FBI again. I don't. Her gaze flicks to my face, and she tilts her head forward, beckoning me to volunteer. After a beat, I nod. All right. Thank you. She leans closer and kisses my cheek. I think I'll help make dinner. Avery slides from her chair and leaves the room. Ethan stares after her for a long moment before he looks back at me. How long have you guys been a couple? Not long. At the risk of opening a can of worms, I wait, but incline my head for him to keep going. She's pretty fragile right now, Shane. It's not the best time to start a new relationship, is it? Avery will be fine. She's not as fragile as she looks. Why? Because she managed to survive a violent attack? Yeah, actually. I run a hand over the table's smooth surface. And because she's always been able to handle herself where I'm concerned. What does that mean? Ethan asks. It means she's the one. And she knows it. I stand and stretch with a wry smile. Sullivans don't talk to feds, Dad. We avoid them. Now excuse me while I find the card an FBI agent gave to Avery so I can call him for her.
Avery. On the grass of GU's main quad, Shane and I stand among a group of mostly female students. We're waiting about 20 feet from a wooden platform. That's a makeshift stage for the upcoming announcement. News teams point their huge cameras at the podium. Cold wind blisters my face as I pull my coat's hood tighter. The dean, the chief of the campus police, and a woman who's probably from GU Media Relations walk up the steps to the platform. There doesn't seem to be anyone from the FBI present, or anyone from the city's police department. The dean's gray hair ruffles in the wind. He wears a dark suit with a sprig of holly pinned on his lapel.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for coming. I will only make a brief statement today out of respect for the families who, even in the midst of this holiday season, are uncertain about the fate of their missing daughters. Our thoughts and prayers are with them as ever.
His cold, reddened fingers grasp the podium as his eyes scan the assembled faces.
It is with both sadness and relief that I'm here to identify 21-year-old Daniel Take as the criminal known as Casanova. A few days ago, he attempted to attack a female student who courageously defended herself. Thankfully, she is uninjured. He, however, is dead.
The murmurs begin immediately.
Everyone involved is cooperating fully with law enforcement to try to quickly determine the location of the other young women he victimized. As soon as we have any updates, we'll communicate them without delay. Thank you for being here today and for continuing to help us search for our missing students.
Questions are shouted at the dean immediately. I turn, shaking my head at Shane as my heart sinks. Deep down, I'm more and more convinced Daniel isn't Casanova. Dean, can you tell us the circumstances of Casanova's death? Was he shot by law enforcement? He was not shot. I'm not at liberty today to share the details of his failed abduction, but I'm sure the facts will emerge in due course. It wasn't a failed abduction. He wasn't there to kidnap me. Dean, who is the student? Is her name Avery Kershaw? I freeze. Someone leaked my name. Shane's arm comes around my waist and guides me to a walking path. For a moment, the dean's eyes lock with mine, causing at least 10 heads to swivel in my direction. Shane moves around me in an instant, blocking their view of me. We cut down a side path to the parking lot where the porch waits. Reporters and their cameramen pursue us. A part of me doesn't want to run. A part of me is tempted to stop and share my concerns, so women don't return to campus unaware they may still be targets. I don't speak, though. My body hurtles along the path, feet crunching into snow and leaving dark footprints. We reach the car, and Shane puts me in the passenger seat, ignoring the shouting reporters rushing toward the lot. As ever, he is calm. Once inside, he maneuvers the car around the throngs like a Formula One driver. You all right? He asks, glancing over. Yeah, I'm fine. I wish the dean had waited. But I trust the FBI will keep working on the case until they're satisfied it's really over. Shane raises his hand to block the media from taking pictures of me through the windshield. My bodyguard until the bitter end. Once we're out of the lot, he shifts gears and leaves everyone far behind. By the time we get on the expressway, we're lost in a sea of holiday travelers. Hey, he says. I turn my head toward him. Yes? That settled it. We're going out of town for New Year's Eve. Pick a place, or I will. Edinburgh? Yeah, sure. His hand rests on the gear shift and mine snakes over to cover it, stroking his knuckles. What made you choose Edinburgh? If we're over there, why not London? Or Dublin? In his article, Eric made it sound like Edinburgh's Hogmanay is the best New Year celebration in Europe. Sorensen? What article? The one in the school newspaper around this time last year. Shane's brows rise. Last year? How did you see it? I read Ethan's. I didn't catch it. Did they slide Sorensen's piece in on the break? I don't think so. You know Eric writes under a twisted version of his name, right? I'm teasing now. It's obvious that Shane didn't know until this minute about Eric's pen name. Shane's eyes narrow, and he's silent as he thinks. Is it Rickson? Something Rickson? S. Rickson. How'd you find out it was him? That's a secret. His gaze cuts to my face immediately. Not for me, it isn't. Spill. I smirk, despite how serious he sounds. Are you jealous? Maybe. Now spill. My fingers move to the side of his face and trace a path through his stubble. Maybe we can trade secrets. My concentration is getting better, and my interest in a secret room has returned. Shane captures my hand and moves it to his mouth, where he bites the flesh on the back of it. Hey, I protest, trying to tug it away. His grip tightens, holding the hand captive. You'd better tell me, kitten, before you get yourself in trouble. A shiver of anticipation tightens my nipples. You can't punish me. I'm still recovering. He gives my hand a sucking kiss, then lowers it to rest on his thigh. Right. Because a beast is never what you need in bed. My heart thumps harder, but my smile remains as I look out the passenger window. Shane and I may not know all of each other's secrets yet, but the secret of what we are to each other is something we've always understood. Deep down in the dark and hidden places is where we own each other.
This is the end of Indecent Demands, a Podium audio production. If you enjoyed this audiobook, we would love for you to rate and review it. For more contemporary dark romance, check us out at podiumaudio.com and sign up for our newsletter. We promise we won't spam you. Also, consider joining our community of listeners, fans, and trolls on social media. We're active on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and Reddit. We'd love to connect. You have been listening to Indecent Demands, Book 1 of Dark Nights, produced by Troy Odie, written by Marley Ray, performed by Michael Pierce and Ramona Master. Text copyright 2022 by Marley Ray. Production copyright 2023 by Podium Audio. All rights reserved.
Here's a note from the author. Hello. Thank you for listening to this wonderful audio production of Indecent Demands. Would you like more of Shane and Avery? I'd love to share a bonus epilogue set at Grandpa Joe's Christmas party. Visit my website at marleyray.com and subscribe to my newsletter. I'll deliver the Christmas Eve story and all my other bonus content to you. Thanks again for listening and best wishes. Marley.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.